and the comedians. And we're going to be listening this morning from the art of two great American comedians, Dwight Fiske,
and also Ray Bourbon.
Oh, Ray Bourbon, yeah, sorry. And Stan Freberg. And the first person who will talk will be William Shirk. He's very well known to all of us. He's a great authority on popular culture, and he's from Bowling Green University, where he's the record sound recordings librarian, and he's also a great collector, thousands probably, many thousand records from 1950 on. So it's a great pleasure to introduce you, William Shirk, who will tell you about Ray Bourbon and Dwight Fiske.
Thank you, Carlos. I hope we get all my media straight. Last time I gave a paper, the room was dark, and I had to control the slides, and I had audio at the same time, and I was very crippled at that moment, but hopefully we can handle it now. It gives me great pleasure to be able to be one half of a great triumvirate here with Steve is. And I've been collecting records since about 1950, and early on in my collecting career, I discovered, of course, I've always enjoyed humor, and I discovered that I was finding these 78s by these two very strange comedians, Dwight Fiske and Ray Bourbon. But it was kind of funny that Ray Bourbon, I also saw his name spelled R-A-Y and then later R-A-E. Well, you know, we had to do some investigating into that. And so this is sort of the culmination of my investigation into both Dwight Fiske and into Ray Bourbon. One thing that I noted right on, and it was sort of unique, but at the same time most pleasurable, to be able to link these two performers together, because in a way they have the same type of vocal delivery. They performed in the same way. They performed in the same type of venues. They performed at about the same period of time, from, say, probably the late 20s, Fiske actually started earlier in the late 20s, up till the late 1950s. And in fact, they both, as far as I can see, were also born in the same year, 1892. Both of their musical performances almost strictly were always themselves performing, singing, or talk singing, or reading, with one piano accompanying them, Fiske accompanying himself, and Bourbon usually having another piano accompanying himself. But there, sometimes the twain has split. Dwight Fiske was a very macho man, probably making up for his short stature. But Ray Bourbon, who was probably at least 6 foot tall, was not macho. And we will find two ends of the sexual spectrum in the performances of these two gentlemen. I've been spreading a rumor, which is really great. I spread a rumor in my first paper on Party Records in Nashville a number of years ago, and I'm going to dispel that rumor. Since I started the rumor, I'm going to end the rumor with this presentation, especially related to Dwight Fiske. Some of it's directed related to Fred Williams, because I think that he'll end that rumor, I hope, you know, spread along to his friends. And another thing to notice, I'm going to be playing some examples of these performers, and you note that they have a very keen sense of humor, they have a very keen eye for the contemporary music scene, show business scene, and the whole political scene. So as they say, notice in their delivery the exact wording of their pattern. So to start, and I know that a lot of people have wondered, what is Dwight Fiske? Where did he come from? Where is he now? And questions like this. Well, I found out in doing my research is that there is very little published information on either of these two people anywhere. And so I had a heck of a time trying to find out birth dates, death dates, when they even performed, and recording dates. So what I'm going to relate to you is probably about all in a nutshell as to what I was able to find. And I'd love to find somebody somewhere who has ever seen either of these two people perform live, if you ever hung out in places like that. We're going to start first with Dwight Fiske. He was born in Providence, Rhode Island, probably, according to his death notice in the New York Times, in Rhode Island, in Providence, Rhode Island, about 1892, from what I can judge, it was 1892. He attended Harvard with the intent to be a lawyer, but instead he decided to study music, and he went over to Paris to the conservatoire and performed for American visitors to France to earn money. This was during, just right around the period of World War I. While he was there, Marie Dressler, the actress, saw him and hired him for a benefit at the American Hospital in Paris. And then he went to London, where later Tallulah Bankhead got him a two-week tryout at the Café Anglais, and he remained there for about 9 months. The first review I found, and one of the few reviews I ever found for a concert that he ever performed, was in 1922, April 17th, New York Times report for the next day. He appeared at the Prince's Theater, accompanying himself on the piano, and also accompanying spoken text to Paul Lysak. Now, many of you may have never even heard of Lysak. I remember him from some of his early children's records on Victor and Bluebird. And then a Dorothy Fox, I don't know what she did, was also on the show. And then Fisk's final finale was a solo called At the French Embassy. He continued around the United States in middle-sized to small venues. And there were times when, in reviewers, they were able to state very poignant facts about his performing style, which you will notice in the musical examples. And a writer once described him as one who sits at a piano and tells three-dimensional stories, tall, broad, and a bit thick. Fisk wrote all his own music and lyrics and always accompanied himself on the piano while performing. In addition to the musical performances, Fisk also published two books of his poetry. And here's the first one, in 1933, Without Music, with an introduction by Robert Benchley and illustrated by Scott Wilson. And it was published by Chatham Press in 33. In 1936, he had a second book, Why Should Penguins Fly? And Other Stories, was published by McBride. They're both quite rare. Neither of them are in our library, and I got them in interlibrary loan from Kent State University. And as he was billed, the King of Lear by one of the L-E-E-R, by a Variety writer, he set the pace for ensuing cycle of double entendre pianologists. That's a nice good word. He was a literate raconteur with a svelte style, these are my words, placing him a cut above the run-of-the-mill performers. And he had three distinctive periods of recording activity, which is important that both Bourbon and Fisk performed live, and they also had brief recording careers. The only difference is that Ray Bourbon did some legitimate or illegitimate theater work. Fisk's first series of recordings were done on a series of 17 12-inch 78s for Victor from a period from 1933 to 1936 on the 36,000 series. And they were later leased to his own private label, Fiskiana, which he sold through the mail. But they retained the original matrix numbers or the pressing numbers from the Victor recordings. And this is where, this is the first time I ever saw a citation. It was when I worked at Cleveland Public Library in the late 60s in a clipping file, which they no longer could find this clipping, that he was getting in trouble with the postal authority because they claimed that he was mailing pornography through the mail. Well, you can be a judge for yourselves. A selection of the titles that he recorded for Victor during that period of time were, and the first one was called Two Horses and a Debutante. He sang, or he performed about love in his own inimitable way. Many times they were paired up, a famous man and a famous woman, Antony and Cleopatra and what have you, in a, quote, love affair. Ida, the wayward sturgeon, Clarissa the flea, Antony and Cleopatra, Tilly, the pure white leghorn. All right, and this one here, which I want to play for you, and it's in its entirety, Mrs. Pettibone. And if I don't have the page here, but in the printing of the texts in his poetry books, he has inflections which were reflected by a reviewer. A reviewer remarked that no way could the printed lyrics transpose the type of performance that you would have experienced from Fisk in his live performances. So you will be able to hear exactly how he performed, as pretend like he's reading it in front of you, how different it would be if he would be sitting here playing the piano and performing.
Here we go. Now it all happened in a little country town. But the Women's Guild were holding their annual Friday afternoon meeting. Miss Mary Alden Fair, the 58-year-old president, virgin to the end, arose and said, "Girl, you remember last Friday we took up the subject of Manchuria? And the old lightning report, for this being the last Friday before New Year's, up a subject very near your heart, but very rarely mentioned in its thriving community. And of marriage. So I'm going to call on Mrs. Pettibone, who has buried three husbands, to tell us everything she knows." Now Mrs. Pettibone arose there, fat and sporty, with a twinkle. Like that all day long, it was biological. Just couldn't help it. She said to ladies of the guild and your distinguished president, Miss Mary Alden Fair, "I'm sure you expect me to tell you far more than I know. But any information I can give you, I will give you with all my heart. As you all know, my first husband, Mr. Brown, had a club foot and was paralyzed in one leg. All I can say about our marital relations, they were lousy." Now my second husband, Mr. Thayer, and Lady Dior's dear president, was an extraordinarily well-built man to look upon outside the home, but in the home, what a fraud. He had a bad rash, an epileptic fit, and I never knew where I might do it. Ladies and gentlemen, it's terrific. I buried him with nothing but a bird. But now I'm going to tell you something. Lend me your ears. My last husband, Mr. Pettibone, was a man in every sense of the word, as you all know too damn well. Oh, I'll never forget our wedding night. What a night. We went to Fall River and had a big fish dinner. Why, I will never know. Directly after dinner, he said, "Let's go upstairs." And I thought, oh, hell, I've done this so many times. So we went upstairs to a little room overlooking a lot of factories and the old Fall River line. I stood there wondering why in hell I'd gotten into this mess. Suddenly, without a word of warning, Mr. Pettibone popped up his clothes and plunged into an old hot tub. And he curled that moustache you all loved so well. Meanwhile, I peeked to the door and was not too displeased. An old timer, I jumped into bed myself and said, "Come what may." When suddenly the bathroom door opened and out came Mr. Pettibone. Just as naked as a child in white cockade. But he came over to the bed and he clapped his hands and he kicked his heels and he said, "And now, Mrs. Pettibone, if you
wonderful? Isn't that wonderful? If you please. His second series of recordings he made for Liberty Music Shop label, and they were four 12-inch 78 RPM records issued as an album and recorded in 1939, a number of them reflecting the later part of the 1930s, subject-wise. The eight titles were Toast of Calcutta, Thank You for Calling, O Evening Star, Souvenir of the Fair, From Titles to Tales, Havana Night, Town and Country Boy, and His Excellency. Here's where I dispel the rumor, Fred. Okay, check this out. We all remember that. That's the later album out of sequence of a reissue of his later gala sides on Jubilee Records. The Gentleman, how am I for foci? There, we gotta get everything just right. Yeah, let's see. You know what? That's not Dwight Fisk. Are we all set? This record came out in the late 50s, and that woman that's supposedly standing next to him should be Nan Blackstone. Nan Blackstone was recording in the early 1930s. So that is neither Dwight Fisk, and that is not Nan Blackstone. But there's Dwight Fisk from the album, okay? That's a picture of him from the album. Now, let's see if we can... The Liberty Music Shop label. Okay, that's as best I could get. 1939, Collier's Magazine had an article about called When Men Mix It Up. And it's about Dwight Fisk from the East Coast and Edward G. Robinson from the West Coast giving their favorite salad recipes. And that's a picture of Dwight Fisk mixing it up. So now we know what Dwight Fisk looks like. Mike Beal said he had seen a picture of him somewhere in some ad somewhere. But we got it. And all he was a diminutively sized person, not a dwarf, like we and I, of course, believed for a number of years and enjoyed spreading that rumor, okay? No more, the secret's out. In the mid-1940s, he issued approximately 50 sides for the Gala record label, who you may remember for another famous artist, Charlie Drew, who and his witty ditties. Who was basically a party record label. I know about party records. Some were redos of the Victor stuff, others were originals. And some of the sites appeared later on 10-inch Gala LPs, and then in the 1950s on Jubilee LPs. And it was ironic that my good friend Lee Cooper did his Little Red Riding Hood, and unbeknownst to me that he was doing something like that I chose as an example of his later recording career of Fisk's for the Gala label, The Hair of the Wolf. We'll all dig this.
Hair of the Wolf. For old Mr. Wolf, the season had been a very bad one indeed. But he didn't realize how bad until one morning he woke up and saw a little red rabbit.
I've come for just one thing, Mr. Wolf, said
that wonderful? Isn't that wonderful? And then this is an example of one of his 10-inch, later 10-inch LPs on Jubilee, songs his mother never taught him. And even though he was inactive during the last years of his life, he made a comeback in June of 1954 at the Black Orchid in Chicago. He had really not performed very actively since 1947. And for the record, he died at Harkness Pavilion at the Columbia Presbyterian Medical Center in New York, November 25th, 1959. And his last place of residence was the Roger Smith Hotel, and at the time of his death, he left two sisters. Sounds like an obituary at the end, but it probably was a son of obituary. Okay. All right. Now, on to our other wonderful person, who is our friend, Ray Bourbon. Ray Bourbon is a very intriguing character because there's a lot of information that has been sneaking around that he has claimed as part of his life, which very possibly is not. So you have to take a lot of what he has said or written with a grain or two or three or salt and a little bit of pepper. He was born on a family ranch in Texas on the U.S.-Mexico border, August 11th, 1892. And as he is quoted as saying, "I've been on the border ever since." he was, quote, sent to school in England, where he frequented music halls and entertainment clubs. And he appeared in the stage play Catherine Was Great as the character Florian with Mae West in New York in 1944, and from 44 to 47. And then 4 years later, he appeared in New Jersey in a revival of Miss West's Diamond Lil from 48 to 1950 as Bowery Rose. As a 6 foot, 175 pound female impersonator, he made many nightclub and intimate room appearances throughout the United States and abroad, including Buenos Aires, Cairo, Havana, Hong Kong, Istanbul, Juarez, Madrid, Shanghai, among others, plus a Carnegie Hall appearance, which I could never find a review of. He also did a command performance, they say, for Edward, King of England at Belvedere Castle. And he had two distinctive periods in his recording career, at least that's what I thought, until my good friend Walter Hahn from Beaver, Pennsylvania showed up at the Wednesday night shindig and he gave me a recording on a completely different record label that Ray Bourbon recorded probably at a different time. So we can say that he had probably three different specific and distinct periods of a recording career. For sure, I can say, for the music Liberty Music Shop label, again cropping up with those wonderful personalities, in the late 1930s, probably 1936 for the first four titles, and 1939 for the last six titles, with Jack Burke listed most of the time as accompanying pianist. He recorded 10 sides under his own name, Ray, including Chiropractor's Wife, Gigolo, Trombone Trixie, First Swimming Lesson, Bashful Cowboy, Millie, Bedtime Stories Part 1 and 2, Oriental Opera, and Spanish Opera. Now, what I want to do is quickly show you pictures of Ray in various guise as he appeared in different venues. Okay, we'll go back to. So I want to play you an example of his Spanish opera, our friend Carmen.
Oh, is that really awful for Carmen? But that's what it has to be, just the same, Carmen. You see, we're going to do the opera, and we felt we were going to explain it to you so you know what we were doing, because you never know exactly what we're doing anyway. But anyway, I play the part of Carmen. I have a stinging Carmen in my piano player, who is 6'4", has blue eyes and black curly hair, and weighs 195 pounds. Good God. He plays the part of Micaela. Now that word is a bit hard to say, so we'll call her Mickey for short. See what I mean? Well, anyway, we've been working in a cigarette factory for years, rolling cigarettes. So one night when we're out to a movie, we find a drunk and we roll him. We find that rolling drunks is much more lucrative, so it's drunks from then on. So while we're out rolling, I fall for a big jerk called Donald Eddy. I trip over something he's dragging. I think it's a saber. I found out that it wasn't later, and I brush him off, but quick. And while Michaela is out, she falls for a bullfighter called Escanilla. With a name like that, he should fight bulls. Anyway, I like the bullfighter better than she does, and I take him away from her. You can see the plot is very, very intriguing. And I take him away from her. So anyway, she's not speaking to me. And as the curtains pull, we see the firefighters are
very large bullring. The place is filthy with senoritas, the fire and the waving in the breeze. I'm sitting there in my box and I'm so hot my cat's neck snapping, but I'm having a lovely time. And Mikhail isn't speaking to me because I have said to her, I said, how do you always have so much money? She says, I hoard. I said, so do I, but I get a thing to show for it, and she hits me. And from then on, we're not speaking, but she's hitting me. And of course, she has that, she's got to hit somebody, the poor sow. So near the band is playing, and the bullfighters march into the ring. Oh, what a wonderful sight. They're taking large, big steps, because the bull is just coming to hit them, they don't want to make no slips. And of course, I don't blame them. So they march up to my box and bow very low, and I say, give it to the bull. So they go to the bull and go, with a sword to the bull. Like that. I don't know what that means, but that's what they're doing to the bull. And the bull says, oh, take it easy. And the bull says, so he starts to jump up where the Spaniards are sitting. You should see the Spanish fly. Every dimension I've ever seen, so much confusion. And in the midst of all this confusion, Mikhail gets up and sings, I hate your feet too big. Start naked. Oh, the oh, it's awful. I'm telling you, you love the sight of it. And just at that moment, Dante and Escamilla come to my box to pay their respects, and the $2 from the night before. And if they meet, they have a fist fight. And while they're fighting, they're rolling on the floor. And while they're rolling on the floor, they discover they like it better way and get up and kill me. Well, it's wonderful. I've never seen anything like it. Pardon me, I have a cold. Standing out here with no clothes on, I'm not getting anybody cold, but I've got a cold. So then, I get up in my death seat, even they kill me, and sing a wonderful thing. Oh, everything's been done before, but not the way I do it. I would advise catching this performance because it really might be the last one we'll do. Never forget the night we had one of those things. Police wagons running up and down the street with syringes blowing. That's what I'll never forget about. Let's be normal.
Isn't that wonderful? Then, again, as I said, the second part of his recording career, which I have not yet been able to date, the two discs that were cited to me, one was the disc which actually was given to me by Walter Hahn, was on the Imperial label, and the two sides were Queen of the Navy and, let's see, what do we got here, and Orchids to Alice. And the other one that Walter said that was also, he knew it existed, was one side was called My First Piece and the flip side was called My Last Piece. I'm not sure what that means. Anybody? I'm kind of dumb. Okay, then the last part of his recording career, he made a series of recordings, LPs, for his own label, UTC, which I have yet to figure out what UTC stands for. However, okay, there you go. Okay, yeah, right, Uncle Tom's Cabin, there we go. All right, those darn ice blocks, right? Okay, well, the library at Bowling Green has just about all of them. I want to show you the covers. This is the first rare one without his name on it, Evening in Copenhagen, and then another 10-inch LP, Bourbon, and then 100 Proof Bourbon, and then these are various albums that he came out with, Don't Call Me Madam, You're Stepping on My Eyelashes. This is the first album he did, Evening in Copenhagen, 12-inch one, Intimate View. And then here, Around the World in 80 Ways. There, Hollywood Exposé. And this is the one we don't own. This was taken from an album cover back, Ladies of Burlesque. Let's see what we have on there. And this, we want to show that right away. He began living in a house trailer when entertaining away from his ranch with his kids, which were 12 pet cocker spaniels, one boxer, and one, as he says, you name it. Here we go. This is the great part. In 1968, he began serving a life term in the Howard County Jail in Big Spring, Texas, as an accomplice to a murder stemming from a dispute over pet dogs, probably his. And during his prison fight, Mae West and other showbiz friends helped him financially, albeit unsuccessfully. And at one time, he sent out a press release from what was probably his residence in El Paso in May 1956, stating that he had a sex change operation in Juarez, Mexico, performed between September 55 and May 56 by a Dr. Emmerich Zekely, a former Hungarian woman specialist who fled Nazi-torn Hungary. All right, so we have that. It was supposedly the first such operation to be performed on the North American continent. Now his female measurements were 44, 36, 40. And we go forward, let's see what we got there. All right, I want to make sure am I going the right way? There we go, okay. And that is the album on the UTC label, Let Me Tell You About My Operation. And we will also listen to him tell you about his operation. the LP.
Have you got a minute? Good. Well, just sit down and relax and let me tell you about my operation.
See, his voice is a lot deeper here.
Oh, this is the real dirt. Of course I had it done. To all of you that know me, you might have seen it coming. So this will be no surprise. Everyone asks me, how does it feel? Well, it feels just fine to me. I can be the woman I've always wanted to be. But the change I went south of the border, it took me just days to pack. I arrived at an excess baggage, but I had a lot less coming back. There's been a change in the gender, a big change in me.
A few times he sings.
R-A-Y, I've changed to R-A-E. So if anyone should ask you, just feel free to say, there's been a change in Ray. There's been a change in Ray. Now I can do many things as a woman I can never do as I was. I've been dropped with a man of distinction hat, so I'm dickering with maiden corn broth. Well, I could become an actress, star of stage and screen, replace Ethel Lattimore and make the corn turn really green. Now all this fuss about Marilyn and her ever-shifting gears, that poor little girl has stopped only one bus. Madge, I've been locking up traffic for years. I could even pose for a calendar that would make Miss Monroe weep. And you can bet that when I'm around, that sleeping prince wouldn't sleep. Or I could be an actress. Or a female spy. Can't you just see me as Martha Harry Bourbon, a fat too gay to die? I could be a spy in Suez and find out what Master's doing, keep those pilots happy, and keep those pipelines flowing. Of course, I could star in a show in Las Vegas, dressed like Dietrich in Net and Allure. In her case, they knew what was caught in the net. In my case, they'd never be quite sure. I could give Gina a run for her money. Oh, Lala, friggin' a girl, you are through. I'd love to swing on a trapeze, as Tony and Bert would swing, too. Of course, I won't tell you all of my secrets, just enough to let you find the hint in. But I can do more in a gown by Dior than I can in a suit by Jim Clinton. And I may not say anything completely to convince those doubting Thomases, whose suspicions are slightly shady. You may question some of the details, but you cannot deny that I am a baby.
One of many of his hits. Another press release. Again, these were all suppositions. He may not have really had the sex change. Another press release claimed that he was a descendant of the Bourbons, the French royal family. And when you see the next slide, he had another claim that they found. While serving his prison term in Texas, his health deteriorated, and at the age of 78, he died at the state hospital in Big Spring. And this is his death certificate. I couldn't get anything on bourbon, but down in Texas, they're a little bit freer with some of the documentation. So as you can see here, that, if I can clue that in right here. Father's name, Franz Joseph, the throne of Austria. I wonder. But it says he died of congestive heart failure, rheumatic and arthrosclerotic heart disease, lymphatic with due to lymphatic leukemia. And he had organic brain syndrome with circulatory disturbance, non-psychotic. One leads to wonder there. So, and he was cremated. So, we have now seen the birth and death of two very enigmatic, wonderful gentlemen, and I'd love to find someone who has seen either of these two in performance, because I'd like to have gotten their impressions of their performing style. Thank you very much.